The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We're going to talk about disinformation in our regular series. We're talking about Nigel Farage channeling Enoch Powell and how memes, while sometimes amusing us, may have a sinister intent. We're joined by David Robert Grimes, author of The Irrational Ape, subtitled How Flawed Logic Puts It All at Risk and How Critical Thinking Can Save the World. David, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, let's talk about Nigel Farage. Where was he and what was he up to?
So recently, and echoing things which maybe have happened in Dublin a bit, there was riots in Leeds over Child Protective Services taking a child from a Roma family. And this led to scenes and there was upturned police cars and things like that. And immediately Nigel Farage descended upon it and Lee Anderson, his co-Reform Party member, and started using very racist and very inaccurate kind of sayings about it. Now, this really channeled, I mean, for younger listeners mightn't be aware of this, but Enoch Powell was a UK politician who had a famous Rivers of Blood speech about immigrants coming over. And Nigel Farage has always been a bit of a spiritual successor to that. And now that he's an elected parliamentarian, I think the eighth time he stood, he finally got elected. His entire brand is to diversify culture wars, so to speak. Ironically, to diversify culture wars. So even though this had nothing, and even the Leeds police and the Leeds mayor point out that it had nothing to do with immigration, these were people that were from Leeds, Farage and Anderson tried to co-opt that to direct anger towards the situation, which is their brand entirely.
And Farage said, the politics of the subcontinent are currently playing out on the streets of Leeds. And Anderson said, import a third world culture and you get third world behaviour. I want my country back. I mentioned, by the way, the documentary I saw. I don't know whether you saw it. You're not into sport, but there's one called The Final Attack on Wembley, which looked back at the European Championships in Wembley, where England were a finalist, and the rioting that happened outside. Homegrown yobs destroying the place.
And there's always been an element of that, and we're seeing echoes of this as well. But this is a really common disinformation trope. It is to take an actual fissure point in society that has multifactorial causes. There's many reasons, and even the Leeds police and authorities said they were going to engage with the community there because there's long-standing distrust of the authorities. But these are people that are living in the UK from the UK. So to try and frame this as, you know, immigrants coming over and bringing their problems is entirely misleading. And Farage knows it's misleading. He's an intelligent enough man to know this isn't true. But he does know this will get traction on social media, and that's precisely what he's aiming for.
And then the disinformation, when you've got someone like Tommy Robinson, who's a co-founder of the English Defence League, and he claimed that the Airlie's newly elected Green councillor, Moten Ali, was an active participant. When in fact, what your man Moten Ali was doing was trying to defuse everything.
He was doing something commendable. What I like, by the way, this, even Tommy Robinson, as he calls himself there, that's a fantastic thing, trying to co-opt a version of Englishness for his audience. His name is Stephen Yaxley Lennon, but he uses Tommy Robinson because it sounds more British. So he was the co-founder of the English Defence League, a notoriously racist organisation. And of course, he would single out the one Muslim person that he could see who was doing something commendable and try to make it, and he tried to make it about Islam. But this is really common. This is narrative reframing. It's a central part of disinformation, where you try to take something that's going on and reframe it to your audience to try and reinforce your point, even when the facts don't justify
it. Now, if you had coverage of something like this in local television media, local newspapers, even national newspapers, that's one thing. But with social media, there's an amplification effect. And you see it in Coolock, for example.
Well, that's a really good point. For example, we know that in Coolock, that's been deliberately put that way. This is being framed and co-opting things like people's fears about the housing crisis and obviously the deprived areas being underserviced. And those genuine fears have been co-opted by disinformation. People trying to say they're aiming at you and you have to do this. I mean, let's face it. In Coolock, people are setting fire to a disused paint factory that is housing some of the most disadvantaged people in the world who are fleeing from war zones. This is not like, you know, they're coming to take your jobs, they're coming to take your land. This is basic human necessity being provided. And even then, we have racist agitators who are stoking these flames. We've seen in Ireland this week that a former Grand Dragoon of a KKK is advising Irish racists on how to go viral, on how to get their interactions with the guards to go viral, because that is what gets more and more traction. They know this is about winning the narrative and making people angry. If you make people angry, you stop people thinking. That's really important.
Now, moving on to Kamala Harris, who has been elevated, probably, and I think it's more than likely, she will be the candidate to replace Joe Biden on the Democratic ticket. But she's an easy target for some of these people, isn't she, in terms of her background, mixed parentage, Jamaica and India, and her history as a prosecutor.
And she's a woman. Let's face it, it's America. I mean, you had Hillary Clinton, whether you like her or loathe her, was incredibly well qualified to run for office. And I think Barack Obama said the most qualified person to ever run for office. And she was taken out from the popular vote, or she won the popular vote, but she lost the election to Donald Trump, the singularly most unqualified person to ever go for office. So again, America has a lot of existing prejudices that, of course, as soon as Kamala Harris became the heir apparent to the nomination, disinformation about her immediately started circulating. And this was mainly in the form of people recutting, and this is a really common bit of very cheap photoshopping, or even you can do with AI tools, recutting scenes to make her look like she was supporting something terrible. And because her name was suddenly being searched an awful lot, this is what they do on social media. If you're now searching Kamala Harris and I'm trying to spread disinformation about her, I know that's the ideal time to pump out all these fake memes, this horrific disinformation, because you mightn't know better, because you're actually searching for that information. That's the exact time that people, particularly pro-Trump supporters, are going to pump out nonsense. And they did.
Some of the Republican hierarchy have been warning their rank and file and supporters not to go after Harris because she's a woman of colour and because she's a woman, because this actually might rebound against them.
I imagine the ones doing that are the older guard. I mean, the Republican Party in the last 10 years has changed markedly. If you look at old elections in America, the median Democrat and the median Republican were actually relatively close together. They're a huge overlap, right? Now they are miles apart. You don't have Mitt Romney's in the parties anymore. It's now a loyalty to Trump party first and foremost. It has changed inexplicably in the past few years. So those saying that would be conscious of the fact that could have bad optics are not Trump. Trump and his supporters don't care about optics. They care about energizing their base. So there might be a few people who still have sympathies for the old guard saying that, but unfortunately, by and large, the attacks have even come from elected Congress people,
but
senators.
But I mean, those wiser political heads, pragmatists probably, who are saying, don't do this. It's not going to be helpful in the long run. The more you attack her on the basis of her gender and her skin colour, the more likely you are that the people who might have wandered towards Trump, having been disillusioned with Biden's infirmity, they will just go back.
And that would be true in most circumstances. But what we are dealing with in America, as an extreme example, but around the world, is incredible polarization. Now, if there's people and there's a spectrum of opinion and there's people in the middle, you can sway people in the middle either way. But if you have a binary polarization where, you know, there one people in one echo chamber only listening to one thing and already support one thing, and there's another binary to the other side, you suddenly lose the risk for the cynical side. They have no risk going for the middle ground. There's no middle ground anymore to go for. And unfortunately, we are seeing increasing political polarization. It has grown with social media to a huge degree.
Do we know whether the Democrats are doing these dirty tricks as well?
Well, it was Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high. The Democrats are sometimes criticized for not reacting quickly to dirty tricks. I think they're doing the more laudable thing of not doing that. At the same time, it probably disadvantages them, but it's a bad game to play ultimately, because actually what they want is a more just society, I imagine. And you don't get that by playing dirty tricks. Unfortunately, will that translate in the social media sphere? I don't know.
Now, our final theme is meme, a meme theme.
A meme theme. Memification, I think. Yeah. Weird enough, meme is a word coined by Richard Dawkins, of all people. And I asked him about it once, and he said his original pronunciation was meme. But no one calls them that. It's like GIF and JIF. But so memes, the idea of these kind of semi-ironic pictures, usually with text and captions that convey an idea or sense of things, very popular among younger people in particular, millennials, Gen Zs. But they've been used very recently for spreading health misinformation. Now, they've been used for spreading disinformation quite some time and doing it under some kind of ironic pretext initially to get people interested in, to get a Trojan horse, to get under the usual skeptical radar that people might have. Now, particularly with anti-vaccine stuff, this has been happening quite a bit. And it's done semi-ironically, semi-jokingly, but actually conveys a very negative message. that's actually not a new thing. So there's been anti-vaccine memes of some form, and you're looking at one there going back to the early 1800s. Yeah, I collect these. This is weird.
There's one which shows a creature, a fearsome creature with multiple rows of teeth and horns. And it looks like there are children being poured into the mouth of this creature and then being excreted at the other end. And when they're excreted, they have horns.
Yes. So this was an early meme that your children are being fed to the vaccinators. And a lot of you, I think that one is from the early 1800s. I think it's from 1801 or 1802. Now, remember, vaccination really existed from 1798 in one form or another. And there's been organized opposition to it since then. But all of these memes, you'll see, these are very old ones, historical ones. All of them rely on fear that this is a poison, that this is toxic, that this is dangerous, that someone's doing it for profit, and that it's killing your children. And what's funny, if we, not in a humorous way, but in a kind of amusing way, is that the actual substance of those memes hasn't changed. The anti-vaccine movement today uses the exact same tropes. They have no sophistication. There's been no evolution. There's just been difference in the delivery system. Now they're more likely to use an ironic meme to get people on their side. But this is very full on, but it shows you this is a long historical precedent.
Then there's another one which is kind of as echoes modern day. This is from 1885, and it shows a skeleton, a policeman, and a woman mourning her baby. And the prince says, "Vaccinate, vaccinate, vaccinate. There's money in it. 20,000 victims will be vaccinated within the next 10 days in this city under the present alarm. This will put $10,000 into the pockets of the medical profession."
Well, we've heard that one before, haven't we? What's always funny to me is, as a public health intervention, vaccination is not particularly profitable for anyone. It's why governments often have to step in to get, you know, to stimulate pharma companies to even build them, because you use them once or twice and they're done. But this idea that vaccines all for profit and it's all, you know, they're killing your children for money and the medical establishment are in on it, it's such an old debunked trope.
And so it's funny, big pharma making pots of cash.
And in 2024, we're still hearing a slightly, you know, savvier version of it, but the exact same nonsense. Mm.
And the thing is, social media makes it so easy. They can take one, for example, that famous report suggesting a link between autism and vaccination, which was completely discredited. But absolutely, unfortunately, The Lancet published the paper unknowingly or unwittingly before it was completely debunked.
I would say witlessly in their case. But
it was then debunked. But of course, it allowed people to quote The Lancet.
Absolutely. And this is a real problem, that people can take out of context bits of information that seem to buttress their point. Memes, by the way, are often built around that. As in, like, but the only difference now is there's a layer of irony on most things that actually can make it hard to distinguish whether something is just trolling or just being edgy, or if it genuinely is anti-vaccine. And that's a bit of a gateway. And it's the same. We see that with the men's right movement, the Andrew Tate stuff. A lot of the things that people get into that are by edgy, kind of semi-ironic memes that eventually get them into the harder stuff. And the anti-vaccine movement are using the exact same thing. I should point out, though, even in the early days of the internet, before social media, anti-vaccine activists already had a monopoly on bad information on the pre-social media internet. And that's only gotten worse.
David, thank you very much for joining us. That's David Robert Grimes, author of The Irrational Ape, subtitled How Flawed Logic Puts Us All at Risk and How Critical Thinking Can Save the World.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.